This time in the Magic Kitchen, we are inviting you to join us in the Kitchen Witch's Hearth to discuss plant allies.
I'm Leander Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between. Heard something a little bit different in our intro here, and that's because here we are, season 7 of the Magic Kitchen podcast, and we the magical number that is 7. So we're starting something new this season where we deep dive into a kitchen witch topic for the season. So we're recording this now in spring, and what better time to talk about plant allies than the spring. And if you have any suggestions, we will be doing a summer edition of the Kitchen Witch's Hearth. So if you have suggestions for summer topics that you're excited to learn about, please email us at magickitchenpodcast@gmail.com. That link is in the show notes, or message us on Instagram or through Leandra's website, because that's another good place to reach us, because we'd love to hear your thoughts. And it's a Kitchen Witch podcast, but I feel like we do not bring it back to the kitchen often enough. So
we could do that more. So we will. We are doing that more here and now.
Yes. So how's your spring going?
It is busy. I'm trying to tread water here. I just got back from the Sacred Space conference a couple weeks, but I got to meet a lot of the authors that we interviewed on the podcast and hang out with them. A lot of really interesting workshops and topics we discussed, and it was a really intensive weekend. Like, we were joking that it's like trying to cram all of your college credits into a weekend to get your degree. But it's definitely a must attend. Like, if you can attend it, it's in Towson, Maryland. And it is one of those experiences where you're going to learn a lot. You're going to sit a lot, so your butt's going to hurt. But you get to meet some really cool people. Probably, I got to fangirl out a little bit. But I got to meet so many really neat people beyond the authors that we already know from the podcast, but just, you know, hanging out with people, and everybody's so nice and everybody wants to like connect. It's community, and that's really important.
Yeah.
Then I have some stuff coming up. Like, I'll be at the Spoutwood Fairy Festival in Maryland the end of this month. Then I am presenting at Temple Fest this year, and that's in August. So that's looking ahead a little bit. But yeah, I will be one of their presenters. I will be doing a workshop, an interactive workshop there. So a lot going on. I have a lot, you know, flitting here and there between the tea business and then, of course, the community. We have tons of things going on in the community. This month, we're working on travel altars. And in May, we're going to work on the wild hunt. Of course, I have the women's circles at Serpent's Key. It's just so much going on. So I'm excited, though. It's really fulfilling work. Yeah. And I enjoy it.
Well, and we both just taught at the Shield and Spell Protection Magic Summit that just ended.
Yes.
And that was really fun. Like, I was one of the recorded presentations, so I didn't present live. But it was nice to actually see discussion about my course in the Facebook group. I don't know if you've done that. I went to the Facebook group and I was like, oh, they're talking about me. They were like, that Land Spirits presentation was really cool. I'm like, oh, shucks.
I do need to get over there.
Yeah, you should check it out. I actually kind of, I was excited to see people were liking it, but then I was nervous to see if people weren't. So I just stopped looking after it.
I'm sure they loved it.
Yeah, I loved making it, and I definitely will teach it again because the only way to have gotten it is if you went to that summit. So land spirits for protection magic are that's actually my favorite thing to work with land spirits on, because they're just they're already on the same page. Like, they want to protect the land.
They're already there.
Yeah.
And I did the herbal shield and spell wards and that sort of thing, and
I heard
mine was
so
live.
Many good things.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was fun because I was looking in the comments during at the end of the presentation, because I couldn't see it while I was presenting because I had my screens they had the presentation up and I'm working through the slides and everything, but I went back and I was able, you know, at the end when we're doing the Q&A. And there were so many people in there who were like, oh, my God, I love Dragonfire. Oh, my God, I love Clear the Path. Oh, my God. Like, all my T's were, like, popping up there. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, you don't realize, like, how small the world is until, like, you get into a space like that. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, they know what I do and they appreciate it. And that makes it worthwhile. That makes us want to keep going.
Yeah. And I really hope next year that I can make it out to the U.S. for Sacred Space.
Yes.
And
please.
Hopefully other conferences. Like, I really, there's just so many. And I'm hoping this year figure out how to make next year as possible. And actually, that's what my Patreon is. Like, I literally, my Patreon supports my book tour, which is going to happen in the U.S. And, you know, I need funds. So I have a bank account directly from Patreon for this book tour. Like, that's all it's for. So if you like our work, if you're like, oh, please come to the Pacific Northwest. Like, I've had people, they're like, oh, I live in Alabama, can you come here? And I'm like, join my Patreon and maybe. Yeah. Like, that is what that fund is for. So
help make that happen.
Yeah. Cause that is like all I want to do is interact with people and teach. Like, it's my calling. It's all I want to do is teach people witchcraft and help them find themselves and help them find empowerment and self-love and have those conversations.
Awesome. Same here. Create a rich, enriching experience.
Yeah.
We crave it so, so deeply. And it's superficial when you're just going on social media to get that fix, or you're just going into Facebook groups to get that fix. Like, you really need that deep connection. And I mean, that's the goal. I know you and I offer is to create those deep connections, and I really hope that people get that from us.
And actually, on that note, during the eclipse on Monday, just this past Monday, if y'all listening on the 14th when this drops, I got a message from one of our listeners, and during the eclipse, which we felt like she must have sent it a little before, but it came through like right as it started, and I'm in Greece, so I couldn't see it. I couldn't see the eclipse, so I wasn't like, you know, distracted by this message or anything, but it came through, and it just, I do not think she timed it with the eclipse, but it felt spiritually powerful to get it then. Yeah. And I sent it to Leandra, and she's like, I'm watching the eclipse and reading this. And it's like,
yeah, it was awesome.
We just like sobbed a little bit across the ocean together.
A little bit. Yeah. And
so our listener says, I don't remember if she gave me permission to use her name, so I'm just gonna call you S. I think you and Leandra both do an amazing job. Whenever I recommend the Magic Kitchen, I always tell people, it feels like you're standing in your home talking to two of your relatives about the craft. And I think that's why so many people listen to the podcast. They're not being talked down to or made to feel like they should know all of this by now. I love the vibe that I get. Feelings like I stepped in for a family visit and we just get stuck talking about whatever topic comes up. You guys do a lot of great work, and I know many of us appreciate it.
Thank you.
Like, that's it. That's what we're here to do, is be that comfort for you. Like, if you're stirring that pot on the stove right now, or you're folding that laundry, or you're chasing your kid around,
shopping
the living
room, for groceries.
Yeah. We're hanging out. We're with you. We're hanging out with you.
We are.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. This is the only reason we're able to make this to season 7 is because of the support of our listeners.
Yeah.
We can't do this without you. Otherwise, we're just talking to the void. And what's the point? You know, Elise and I can just sit and
we
talk
can do this
to each
anyway.
Other. Yeah, we can do this anyway.
Oh, that reminds me. It's my birthday month. And I like to feel like, you know, I'm a hobbit at heart. And it is a very hobbity tradition to give mathems or gifts to others on your birthday.
Yes.
And so.
Yes, it is.
I have a free download that I'm giving away to everybody. And the link for it is in the show notes, but it's also simple, seekingnumina.com/birthday. And you just put your name and email and press submit and you get the download. Like there's no hidden pages or anything. Like it, you literally, it opens in the window instantly when you press submit.
That's good.
So happy birthday to me. I hope it's helpful. It's a download on energy protection. So some of you, if you have been in the community for a long time, I shared this a good while ago, but it's worth revisiting. It includes my personal protection sigil, some information on the evil eye, and a lot of practices from my teachings on energy shielding. So I hope you'll enjoy that.
Good. I know. I'll go get that too. Well, and so speaking of energy, so at the end of this month, on the 28th, I am hosting a one-day workshop on energy mastery and hygiene. And the link for that will be also in the show notes. But it'll be a, you'll get lessons stripped out through the day. And then I'm going to end it with a live ritual and a Q&A after that. So you can hang out with me at the end of the day. And that's on April 28th. Nice. So if you're interested in that, like, go ahead, go sign up. The link will be in the show notes. And yeah, we'll have about 500 people in the class and the ritual. So it should be exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. Man, energy protection is just like the theme of April.
It is the theme. But I think it's necessary. We're in Mercury retrograde. So protecting our energy is incredibly important. And learning where we're leaking energy, where we are, like the whole idea of calling back your energy, but where has it been? Whose grubby hands have been on it? What are you calling back to you really? And why aren't you doing extra steps? So yeah, I guess this goes back into that whole idea of, we try to find that enrichment in our path, but if we're only getting it from superficial sources, we're not getting the whole story. And social media kind of does that for us. It gives us the idea, gives us the inspiration, but then we have to go and seek further and get deeper into that subject. And that's part of what this workshop is getting a little bit deeper into it so you can start your own practices, find useful meditations and worksheets and that sort of thing that'll help you manage your energy and master your energy. As you may know, the Magic Kitchen podcast is fully and independently funded by the Witchwood Tea House. So show us some support and head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com to purchase some deliciously hand-blended loose-leaf teas or one of my other botanical products. As a special thank you for your support, please use POD15 at checkout to take 15% off of your next order. So without any further ado, let's get to the episode. Blessed be. So let's dig into plant allies and what that means. So I always like to start with the basics. So what is a plant ally? And Elise, I'm sure you will relate to this because they're similar to land spirits. So a plant ally is essentially the deva, the silma, the essence of that plant, the shining one within that plant that helps guide you in using that plant, can help protect you, and you develop a relationship with it, much like you would a divine being. Sometimes the plant allies are viewed as the like an outside source, kind of like a guardian of that plant. In my tradition, we look at them as kind of one and the same. Like the entity can detach from the plant and be the guardian outside, or it can be within the plant and the plant itself, which they all carry those characteristics. Like I guess the difference between a wood nymph and a dryad versus a sylph or a fairy. So while we have these like Davic communities, so think of a garden bed. You have this big garden bed, it's thriving, you have all these beautiful plants growing. Chances are that's a Davic community, or in my tradition, we call them Silma, which means shining one. And they coexist together to ensure their protection, to ensure their longevity, to ensure that they are thriving. And when we connect with those animistic view of the plant, this essence of the plant, then we are connecting with their desire to protect and nurture and be part of something bigger. So when we are connecting with those plant allies, we're letting the plant teach us. It's that true essence of wort cunning, the old idea of wort cunning, where you're not just an herbalist. You're not just learning from a book. You're not just picking up the book and saying, okay, this one's good for this. This one's good for that. Oh, anti-inflammatory, anti-spasmodic.
Yeah. The utilitarian conversation on the plant.
And that's how I learned herbalism in the beginning, is I learned it from the very allopathic way. You use this plant to cure this symptom, not going deeper.
Yeah.
As a wort cunner, we are touched by the spirit of the plant. So we have connected deeply with the spirit. I'm getting the chills right now just talking about it.
Me too. Me too. I'm like leaning closer to the screen as we're recording this. Like, so
I know it's like your whole being just like leans into this.
Yes.
So if you love plants, if you love herbal medicine, like, this is your subject. This is what you want to pay attention to. And, you know, when we look at the idea of the plants teaching us, you know, in Nordic and Celtic mythology, we had the fairies and the elves teaching humans how to work the plants. In Peru, the shamans go off for decades sometimes, and they go in isolation and they learn from the plants. They bring that back.
Yes.
This is essentially what it is, but in a modern sense. Yeah. So we're in the modern world. We're taking this into our practices so that we can use the plants more effectively. This is how I blend tea. This is how I make my herbal medicines, my magical herbal medicines. The plants tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I know on a basic level, an intellectual level, what this plant is good for. But most of the time, plants are good for many things. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to just use wood betony to help relieve neck tension. We can also use it for cognitive therapy, like, say, if someone gets a concussion or something like that. So plants are intelligent in the body. The body is intelligent with the plant. And if we connect with it on that intimate level, then we can better use these plants in our practices.
Yeah. And I am coming from this on a purely spiritual level. I do not have an herbalism certificate. I do not work with plants for anyone but myself. I mean, sure, I like to make little... And one of my favorite gifts to give people is if I have the time and the resources to make them an incense or, you know, but it's not, I don't make money doing that. Like, that's just something for me. And it also is not founded in these scientific understandings. I would not know how to identify wood betony. I don't know what it is. No idea. But I do know, well, I try to know the plants that I meet. And when I meet a new plant, and this is made, and I love that. This episode's so much fun because Leandra has a huge amount of knowledge from every angle that she described. And my knowledge comes from where probably most listeners are, where you're just kind of drawn to it because it's pretty, or because for some reason when you sat there, you felt a little bit better. And then you looked and it was mostly clover. And you're like, oh, I wonder if clover is calming. Like, you know, those little questions, those little explanations that we seek. And the beauty of working with plant allies is that they do teach you that way.
They do.
You know, like if I was going to apply what I do to medicine or to giving it to others to ingest or something, like, yeah, I would definitely do the scientific research too. I think everybody who's looking to escalate, they should do that.
Yeah.
But for me,
definitely doing research.
Somebody who's connecting in spiritual ways, you know, through meditation, through time spent, through making flower essences, through, you know, incenses. Like, even when I blend incenses from things I harvest, I only harvest the things I am 99.99999% sure what it is, you know, even to say 100%, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Like, I corroborated on many apps and with many people I know, if they think it's what we think it is, but the plant knowledge, like working with plant allies, does not have to be at the PhD professional level. Like, it can be where it is, you know, for me, which is just to interact with the plant, to get to know the plant. And when we talk about plant allies, it's not just the leafy greens, it's also the flowers. And flower teachers are actually one of the themes of my April rituals and the theme of the April meditation and exclusive video on my Patreon community this month. Because flower teachers are really important in the fairy tradition. And people ask me a lot, like, well, what does the fairy tradition do? What's the eclectic fairy tradition? How is it different than, you know, Wicca and these different traditions I've heard of? And that's the biggest difference, is we work really intrinsically with nature to ask nature what it has to teach us. So that's right. something we do in our initiation. And it's something we do in our coven rituals, is to look for flower teachers for that moment. Every ritual is going to be different. Every person is going to be different. Like, we're always getting plant allies or flower teachers, or, you know, it doesn't have to even be a flower. It can be a twig. It can be a branch.
Like, it can be a tree.
Yeah. Like, these teachers do want to work with us, and they do have so much wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the basis of my tradition, is working with these plants. So whether you call me a hedge witch, a green witch, fairy witch, whatever, like, wart they cunner. All tap wart cunner, which that's the term I prefer, is wart cunner, because of how my tradition, my coven, views it. When you initiate into wart cunner, you have been touched by the plants. That means a plant has introduced itself to you, and you now work with that plant. So a good example of how you connect with a plant ally and how they introduce themselves to you is an experience I had in Laura Tempest Zakharoff's workshop on advanced sigil witchery in the Sacred Space Conference this past weekend before last, was a plant that came to me that I have never worked with before. It was henbane.
Ooh.
I've always admired henbane. I don't grow it, but I've not worked with it. Because for one, it's not a plant that I would put into tea. So I don't normally work with the baneful plants, because this one is highly toxic. And but in this meditation, that plant came to me and she bloomed for me in front of in my vision, and created like this shield around me that was the same texture and color of her blossoms. And so that's one example of how plants can come to you and introduce themselves. So it wasn't like, hey, shake my hand. How's it going? You know, yeah. Nice to meet you. It was more like, hey, you're working with me now. This is what I look like. This is how I'm going to present myself to you. And now go home and do all the research and learn about me, learn about my actions, learn about my, you know, astrological positioning, am I hot? Am I cold? Am I wet? Am I dry? Like,
yeah,
all the different herbalist things, but also, you know, I'm going to continue to come to you and we're going to learn with each other. So it's getting to know each other. Another way to connect with a plant, if you don't trance easily, is to just sit and breathe with the plant. So our vibrations, our breath is that immediate connection with a plant. Plants get all the information they need to know from us sitting next to them and breathing. That's all you got to do. Just intentionally breathe. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that scientific exchange with your breath is all you need to know. And if you allow yourself to relax, then you'll start getting those messages. It might be sound. It might be a feeling. It might be color. It might be, maybe you get images. Whatever, however it comes to you, however that plant communicates with you. And then you start learning. You start researching. A lot of face in books.
Real talk. Leandra and I could be trying to sell you socks or a VPN or that cereal everybody talks about, but we like to keep it witchy around here instead. And we can only do that because of the support of listeners like you. When you're joining my magical living community on Patreon, you're not only getting weekly shadow work journal prompts, new moon and full moon rituals, exclusive videos, exclusive meditations, plus bonus episodes of the Magic Kitchen podcast, but you're seriously keeping the lights on in the Magic Kitchen. Thank you for listening and reviewing the show. And if you're ready to meet me in the Magic Kitchen, pop over to patreon.com/Elise Wells and start your free trial. Let's deepen your magical practice together. So once we have a plant ally that we're working with or that we want to work with, and we're starting that research and we're reaching out to them in meditation or with our breath exercises or in any myriad of ways.
Yeah.
How do we apply that in the kitchen, right? We're at the kitchen witch's hearth. Let's talk about the kitchen. So I think for me, it's when I began cooking that I first started to actively connect with plants. Truly. Like if I remember the first plant that I tried to interact with, it was dandelion. And I had just begun my witchy journey. I was 16 and my aunt had put me in charge of making dinner and I had never cooked before. My mom was like I love her. Absolutely no shade, but she was like the classic millennial helicopter parent. Like I was not allowed to ride my bike in our own cul-de-sac unless she was outside watching because I could get hurt. Like that was, so I was not allowed in the kitchen because there were knives in there my whole life. Like I was 16 years old. And up to this point, I had never really been in the kitchen because I was not allowed to. So my aunt had me in charge of cooking and she gave me a recipe. It was really easy. I remember it. It was enchilada casserole and like all the stuff was there, you know, canned black beans. Like this was not an over the top recipe, but it moved me to do it. Like I learned in that experience that like I loved cooking. I loved being in the kitchen. So, you know, that was that moment. So that weekend I was like, okay, like I escalated quickly. I was like, I'm going to start foraging my own ingredients for my cuisine. Like I escalated so far. Nice. So, and my aunt lives near the woods. So she, like, I was like, okay, I'll go harvest some dandelion. And I did it wrong. It tasted horrible. Like I could not get it to taste good. Like I tried everything. Like I sauteed the greens. I boiled the roots for tea. Like I could not get it to be enjoyable. But there was something else there, which it took me, like, I was so in the beginning throes of witchcraft that, like, I didn't even think to myself, like, let's be animistic about this. but I did start to connect with dandelion. And after that, I felt like I knew her a little bit. Like, she made sense to me when I was out and about. And I felt like a new relationship there. And it started with the kitchen. But now, you ain't gonna catch me eating dandelion. Like, if I have a really upset stomach and somebody is like, oh, here, have some dandelion root tea, like if I'm really like hurting and they're like, I promise it'll work, I'll try it. But I'm not out here like advocating dandelions. Like they are not delicious in my mind. I'm sorry.
They're very bitter. Yes.
They're good for you though. Like bitter. No shade. Like eat them if you can. But
well, now if you can pick them young enough, they're not as bitter. But yeah, they have a very, but they're digestive. That's why they are bitter.
And it like we have digestion. Wild greens in Greece that we call them porta, which literally just means weeds. But that's like the variety of them. But there's like so many of them. Like Vlita is my favorite. It's like almost sweet. Like if you looked at it, you might say it's fennel, but it's not. Like it doesn't taste like fennel, but it kind of has those little wispy little leaf things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's delish. It's very sweet as a green, as far as greens go. Yeah. So yeah, like I'm a tourist. Like I want to eat it. Like if I can't eat it, I don't want to work with the plant sometimes. Like I want to eat the plant. So actually that's speaking of the... I want to eat it, but it's dangerous for me. That's why I like flower essences, because you can consume the plant sort of. And the way you make flower essences, which if you missed it, go back to Nicholas Pearson's interview. That was one of my favorite conversations we've ever had. And his book, Flower Essences from the Witch's Garden, is a go-to for me. But flower essences are diluted plants that have imbued their essence in water. And then you dilute that water several times. So there is no trace of the plant in the water anymore. It is purely vibrational, and it can be safe to ingest. And I trust flower essences.
Yeah.
But for the most part, when I'm in the kitchen, it's when I really get to know herbs. So a lot of my favorite plant teachers, I would say rosemary is probably my absolute favorite. Mm-hmm. Like if I could only ever work with one herb for the rest of time, probably rosemary. Because rosemary is clearing and cleansing, but it's also helpful for manifesting. And like, it really is like the herb of all trades, if there is one.
Yeah. Yeah. It does just about everything.
Yeah.
Protection, memory, cognitive, you know, psychic power, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And it's delicious. But,
it is. It's so good. You can, and I like burning rosemary mm-hmm. as an incense rather than other methods, because it's literally smells like a barbecue. Like, it smells great.
Well, and in ancient Greece, rosemary was used for making hermes, or lustral waters, which you used to purify yourself before ritual and after contact with miasma, which was the ancient Greek concept of germs, really, like spiritual germs. Impurities. Yeah. So if you were around a dead body or involved in childbirth, whether as the midwife or the birther or the baby even, they would wash. You would wash in these cleansing waters before you would approach the gods. And the way you would make the waters, hernips, is fresh water from a living water spring, usually as local as possible, mixed with seawater, or if you're not near the sea, just add a little bit of sea salt.
Salt.
And then they would burn a sprig of rosemary and douse it in the water. So it's actually like you energize the rosemary with the fire and then douse it, putting that energy into that water. So it was very clean. And I will say this pro tip, if you make your own hernips, strain it so that all the ash and everything leaves the water behind. And then it lasts for ages, because not everybody has time to do that every single time they do a ritual. But if you want to make this part of your practice, I just have a jar. So I'll take the lid off, get a couple of sprinkles on my hands, and then, you know, all is good. So, yeah, rosemary was very important to the ancients in every culture that had rosemary.
Well, and just backing up to the flower essences, whenever I'm working with baneful plants, that's how I work with them, with flower essences, because you're not going to overdose. You're not going to actually, because plants like thorn apple and I think even henbane, they're so toxic that even touching them can absorb into your skin and you can potentially have an issue. Although historically they've been used as topical pain treatments and that sort of thing. But again, like don't. If you're going to work with a plant directly, make sure you're working with somebody who has like a lot of experience working with them, who knows exactly the dosages, who knows exactly the percentages that could be dangerous. Like belladonna is an example. Literally, it's like 0.12 teaspoons can kill somebody. So it's pretty significant when you're dealing with these plants. Like, make sure you're being careful. But as far as like getting back to the kitchen, when I work with plants and my relationship with plants is they're the ones who tell me when to stop seasoning, or they're the ones that tell me what comes next. Yeah, they're the ones that tell me. And so my husband does this all the time. And you'll probably notice this on my blog, the Magic Kitchen blog, where I started, like I stopped putting recipes because I can't write them down. Like they're inspired. And I can't sit there, cook, and have like my notebook or whatever out to document it. So I just kind of like, okay, we're going to go a different direction with this. But so my husband will always ask me like, oh, hey, you made that great blah, 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 whatever casserole. Can you make that again? I'm like, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, when my husband tries to help me cook.
Oh, God.
He's like, how much rosemary? I'm like,
I don't know.
Just try to feel it out. And he's like, just a teaspoon. I'm like, just feel it out. He's like, a tablespoon.
Sure, start with
I'm
that.
Like, sure, whatever. Yeah, like I can't speak that language. Like, that's why I love Rachel Ray. She's always just dashing, and you know, she's like, a dash of that, a sprinkle of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then that's how my grandmother taught me to cook.
Yeah.
A smidgen. Like, that's how that was her language, a smidgen. Like, what the frick is a smidgen?
Well,
but then you just realize it, you know?
Yeah. Well, my grandma, I never lived in the same country as her. So we really only got to know each other when I moved to Greece. And she didn't live in Greece either. She lived in Kuwait. She was an expat. I grew up as an expat in the Middle East too. So my family's all over every continent.
Yeah.
And so it was really nice, like, to live near her. After we finished recording, actually, I'm going to go over to her house. I just picked some grape leaves for her. Speaking of ways to bring plant allies into the kitchen. I pick grape leaves, and while I'm washing them and drying them, like, I really imbue them with some energy of the good intention of sharing the meal, because they're a hard thing to make. So we only ever do it when the whole family can get together. And I pick the leaves and then we freeze them. And anyway, so I'm doing that tonight. So that's a fun little story to share. But yeah, like, she's 4'8". So she's really tiny. And this is important for the story. But when she teaches me to cook, she'll be like, one hand flour. She's 4'8". Her hand is like half of my hand. So I'm like, okay, what's a yaya hand? Like, I literally, that's how I'm like, mm. So if you look at my recipes I write down from her, like, they're literally like one yaya hand of flour. It's like a quarter cup, I think. I don't know. Like, so yeah, I've sent these recipes to some friends sometimes, and they're like, huh? I'm like, listen, you got to follow your heart on these recipes. Because even she doesn't know. Like, she's so funny because she's, like most Greek women, she's Greek Egyptian, so even stronger, actually, if anybody's part of that diaspora, they know. They're very religious. They're very Christian. And they're the kind of Christian that I can talk with, though. Like, I get along with most Christians I meet, actually, especially outside of the evangelical communities. But, you know, she works with Mother Mary. She works with her saints. Mm-hmm. She reads her coffee grounds. Like, she's not living in her, you know, like, evangelical Christians would hate her. So
they would call her the witch.
Yeah. And like, even like you go to her house, like she's got peach pits sitting on her windowsill. That was the latest. I'm like, what are those? And she's like, oh, because I can grow. So she felt bad to throw away something she could grow. So she's going to try to grow it. Like, she has an animistic sense of things, which is so sweet. Like, she's a sweet old lady. So she cooks the same way. Like, so the one time we were over making something she'd already taught me how to make, and she's like, and little oregano. And I'm like, you told me to just put thyme and rosemary. She said, no, today oregano. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
she's doing the same thing I do. I just love that I'm learning that this comes from somewhere.
Yeah, it's valid.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's the best way to get to know the plants is just have a spice rack where the herbs stay visible to you so you don't, you know, I need object permanence. And then just kind of, you can literally use your hand like a detector and go over and see who feels like being in the meal. And you can start empty. Like, you can be like, I'm going to make some eggs and I'm going to use olive oil. All right. What other herbs do I want? And we can move through that.
What I do is I like to use fresh herbs, even though I have plenty of dried. In the kitchen, I typically use fresh. Like, cilantro is one of my favorite one. So I always have that in the refrigerator, but I like to make gremolatas. And typically those are made with like lemon, olive oil, salt, pepper, and parsley. And it's like a little salsa or a topping that you can put on chicken, fish, whatever. Adds a little brightness, a little color. But I've started experimenting with making different types of gremolata. So I've made a cilantro one. I made a dill one. I made one with walnuts. Yeah, they're really, like, you can really get creative with these. So what I do is when I'm going to the grocery store, I almost always like, it's like the herb section is like, hey, come over here. Yeah. Hello.
We got something to show you.
We got some new stuff over here, you know? So I like gravitate over there and I'm just, I just sit there and I anchor myself and I start sensing like, okay, what am I going to make? Who wants to be a part of this? And, you know, whoever pipes up gets put in the bag and off we go.
Oh, I love that. Actually, I had a Turkish dip, which to me tasted like salsa. Like, I took it home and ate it with tortilla chips after. But it was called Ezme, E-Z-M-E.
Okay.
I think that's what it was called. And it was pretty much salsa, but the difference was instead of cilantro, it was parsley. And I'm pretty sure there was also lemon in it. And they used the spice called sumac, which is like a pink powder that is used in Middle Eastern cuisine. And it was really good. So like tomato, onion, and then instead of cilantro, it was parsley. But I think cilantro and parsley would probably be good. Cilantro is very underused in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
For those listening at home, I feel like I have to say this for Leandra's sake, but my cat Willie is like really in the camera.
Yeah, he's like staring at me right now.
The whole episode, he's been like alert and he's like watching the recording go. He's staring at Leandra. Like, and you know what? Maybe it's because he cooks with me. Maybe he feels a kindred. Maybe. Spirit.
He's like, I want to be a part of this conversation. I need to be here. He's so pretty.
Isn't he? Aww. Oh my goodness. I need to post more pictures of him on Instagram.
Yeah. So sweet. Yeah, he definitely wants to be part of this conversation.
Yeah.
What's your input, Willie?
Well, and it's funny because he came from outside, like most cats in Greece. And I'm trying to think, like, were there any plants he used to hang out with? I think our most common plant here, and this is definitely surprising even to me, even coming here as a kid, like I just never realized this, but chamomile grows wild all over the place in Greece, all over the place. So really, the scent of Greece is like...
That sweet chamomile.
Chamomile, yeah, mixed with like salty air from the sea. At least that's where I live. I live near the sea. And we also have daisies and wild geranium. But they are non-fragrant, unfortunately. But the geranium is beautiful. Geranium. It's bright purple. Yeah. It's stunning, but it's unscented. I don't know why. I don't even know. To be honest, I wonder if it's not quite geranium, like if it's something in the family, but...
Maybe. Yeah, you know, it might be just
could
one
be
of the
a mistranslation.
Yeah. Well, it's like Datura. A lot of people just reference thorn apple as Datura, and really Datura is a classification of plant. So belladonna falls into that as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is why knowing your plants, you have to really do your research, is important, because when somebody says Datura to me, I'm like, okay, which one?
Yeah.
You're not telling me anything. Hey there, witches. Did you know that there's an entire community out there dedicated to you and your journey? The Rebel Mystic community is a space where I offer my decades of knowledge and experience to witches just like you. I do this through live events, monthly mentoring, monthly rituals, a book club, and other resources like workbook pages and meditations. There is even a complete self-paced course library you can access. Check the link in the show notes to learn more about this community and how to become a member. Blessed be. So one of the misconceptions about working with plants and developing alliances with plants is that you have to grow that plant yourself. I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to piss some people off, but that's an elitist attitude.
I have never in my life lived somewhere that I had grass or lawn or greenery or anything on my own property. I've never in my life.
Right.
So when people say that, it's like, oh, you can't work with a plant unless you grow it. That is definitely not true.
Not true.
Definitely not true.
Yeah. I definitely do not blend my teas with fresh plants, and I don't grow them because I can't. I don't have the space. I would not ever be able to blend the teas if I was tending to plants. So I have to outsource. But I do outsource from very, very specific sources because I ensure their quality. And that's one thing that I will say is kind of necessary, is quality.
Yeah.
While you can just, go grab your McCormick seasoning and use that, it's not going to be as effective. I do like to factor into my practice, and this might not resonate as true for you when you start working with plant allies, but I do like to factor in how they were treated while they were being processed, dried, sifted, cut, all that. So when I look for herbs, I do look for sources that are sustainable, that are climate friendly, that use organic practices, wild crafting, small batch type stuff, so that I'm not going with the giant corporations that are just looking to make money. So
and the thing is, too, like this sounds, it can sound elitist to say that too, right? Like to say, oh, you should spend more on your herbs. Mm-hmm. But there's a store I used to get my herbs from when I was a freshman in college. So you can imagine the income I had at my disposal. And it was called The Tea Shop in Lancaster, PA. They were always at the Central Market. Mm. And it was like $1 per ounce. And I don't know about y'all, but like I go through an ounce of herbs in my kitchen like once a year. At max. The only thing I go through a lot more of is Trader Joe's everything bagel seasoning. I go through that like it is, I don't even know what's in that stuff. But other than that spice, I really do like, don't, you know, most of us don't use like an ounce of oregano in a year. So, you can actually find good local ethical means of herbs. I promise.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, an ounce of any herb except for the heavier stuff, like your roots, your barks, nuts, that sort of thing. Those ones are, you're not going to get volume wise a lot more.
Yeah. True.
But you're still getting an ounce. It's all by weight. And, but you don't have to use a whole lot. I think sometimes we overuse our herbs in spells.
Simmer pots.
<stuff.
clears throat> Simmer pots. Oh my Lord. Which,
okay. I have nothing against simmer pots. I use them. But my simmer pot is teeny tiny. It has a tea light under it. And you don't need a whole lot for that either.
Yeah. And actually, simmer pots, I feel like it's so strange to me that they've stayed popular too, like over the years. Mm-hmm. Like I still see those things pop up. I'm like, I don't think they're like offensive or horrible or anything, but
no,
they're like step one. Like, what do you do with the water after? Are you going to just throw it away? Is it going to be part of libation for a ritual? Is it going to be tea you drink? Most of the time, it could be.
Yeah. Okay. Let me touch on that then. The simmer pot thing. So when I make a simmer pot, it's going to have more than one action. It's not going to be a, I made the room smell good. Now I'm tossing it out. It's going to become a base of a lotion. It's going to become a base of a body scrub. It's going to become a tea I drink. So depending on how long it simmers, it might be a decoction, which is an extended brew of a tea, those are when you get into therapeutic doses of the herbs. So if I have like maybe my back is hurting really bad. So and I'm going to do a simmer pot because I want to have that experience where I call a deity into that simmer pot and have that's their resting place during the ceremony. But I don't want to just throw that out because now it's even more sacred. So I'm going to use it in some way. So it could become the base of an elixir, that sort of thing. So think about like if you're going to do a simmer pot. This really is like an animistic thing.
Yeah.
But it's also a literal thing.
That's why I think it's animistic, but it's also literal. It's telling people like, okay, take these. Like the one that kills me is the roses, because roses they take so much to be alive and to be there, and you know, and maybe they were bought at somewhere that their mileage to get to you was really difficult. And it's just, it just doesn't feel right. You know, it doesn't seem like the right way to do that. And I don't. So I do that where I make lotions with water that I've. Especially with
the point, because the point of that is, and I think this is why it rubs you the wrong way so much, because we don't just discard what we connect with. So if we're working with plant allies, if we're working with the essence of that plant, if we're looking to be touched by that shining one inside that plant, we're developing a relationship. We don't want to disrespect that.
Yes, exactly.
It would be like you calling up a friend saying, hey, I need you.
Yeah.
I need you to pick me up from work because my car died. And you end up taking that person to work and to and from work for a week. And then when your car dies, they're like, oh, sorry, can't help you.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. Like there has to be reciprocity in working with plant allies. Otherwise it's superficial. And I will tell you this right now. If your spells are failing and you're using herbs in your spells, they have decided not to work with you because you're not connecting with them. You're not treating like the people that are taking cinnamon, they're taking handfuls of cinnamon and blowing it out.
I'm sorry, people who are regular listeners are like, oh, we know, we're tired about this shit again. And while we're at it, we also hate grass.
Yeah, we do. I hate grass too. Like if I could get rid of my lawn, actually I'm slowly like getting rid of my lawn and trying to do it covertly because for some reason, like recreational mowing is a thing around here. But anyway, so like if you're disrespecting an herb to the point of where you're not allowing it to connect with you. You're not allowing yourself to connect with that plant. And you're just using it for a commodity mindset sake. And that's what the issue is. It's
the commodification of herbs.
Yeah. You don't, if you commodify it, it's not going to work for you because now you're in the capitalistic mindset.
Yeah.
You have to develop that relationship. Mm-hmm. So if you're just like, oh my God, first of the month, I better blow my cinnamon out the door. And you can't figure out why you're not getting prosperity in your life. There's your answer. Yeah. You're not developing a relationship. You're not using that herb in the method it wants to be used. You're using that herb in the way some influencer told you to use it. And that's not an authentic path. That's not an authentic connection.
Yeah. And sacred reciprocity.
Okay, rant over.
Yeah. No, but sacred reciprocity, from it just has to be at the root of, if we're going to interact with a spirit, plant, deity, human, or otherwise, we need to be aware of, what am I doing in return?
Yes.
And for those curious, there is a concept of sacred reciprocity called Kharis, Kharis is probably the best Englishized translation. And it was very present in ancient Greece as the way of connecting with deity. It was the understanding that if I give this offering to the deity, then they give me this in return. And it wasn't transactional. I think that's what magic became in the Middle Ages. And then it took a while, honestly, maybe even only the 1970s, I would say, for that to be shaken off. And for people to say, wait a minute, this is a spirit that I'm working with and I need to respect and expect respect in return. So we're still coming out of a shadow period for spiritual work that was very power over, very dominant focus,
very
patriarchal.
Over, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're only 50 years out of that as we speak. So if you see some subjects Babies. That, yeah, like it really is new. So I think there's a lot of healing yet to do with those relationships, and capitalism certainly doesn't help it.
No, it does not.
And if you're looking to work with plant allies in a deeper way and dive in further, our bonus episode a couple months ago in the Magic Kitchen Pantry was an episode on plant allies. So yes. We dive deeper and go a little further. And there is a whole backlog of bonus episodes in the Magic Kitchen Pantry, which you can join either through my Patreon community or direct at the source on Rebel Mystic. Both of those links are in the show notes.
Yeah. And if you join, you get the entire Rebel Mystic community too, if you join the package. So there's the Rebel Mystic with the pantry attached. And that means you get all the live events, you get the course library, you get, oh God, there's so much. I was going through it yesterday. I'm like, wow.
I know.
There's a lot here.
I know. And same, if you join through mine, it's a combo. So like I was looking at mine and I was like, how do I figure this out? Like I literally have over 100 journal prompts now in that folder. Yeah. So I'm like, maybe I should have a separate folder for journal prompts for happy things versus sad things, or I don't know. There's just so much content in that library now.
Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking N-U-M-I-N-A.